Welcome to In Movies We Grow. I am your host, Kel Smith. Today, I have an incredibly special guest with Michael Bitten, who is the co-host of Action Movie Podcast with Philip Shadburn. And then we have, and he also does, Michael Plays Video Games for YouTube. And also is a co-director on Bad Ego Productions. Runs a bunch of other like small little production things. Benton and Espinosa Imaging. I mean, just a bunch of really cool stuff. And I cannot, you know, wait for you all to hear this episode. Michael and I got in much longer, not as long as Tyler Scruggs' episode, not the last one. But we really, I mean, I think we nailed this episode, and I cannot wait. I don't want to spoil anymore. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for staying for the anchor ad at the beginning. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Now on to the episode. So, and then with music, and then we'll kind of fade into this, but
okay.
Awesome. If you want a more like specific question, let's just start with do you remember the first movie you saw?
Oh my God. The first movie that I remember seeing?
Of course. Yes.
Oh man. Okay. Holy shit, I have never thought about that. Give me a second. Let me think about this. I've never been asked that in all of the media junkets I've done. I've never been asked that question. Uh-huh. Hold on. That's a good one, man.
Absolutely.
The first one I remember would have probably been Fantasia. I remember watching that on VHS or on the old TV, on the old boob tube.
So this was a VHS. Was this like the, you know, clapper VHS like Disney used to have?
Oh man, I wouldn't remember. I mean, I remember all the gimmicks they used to have. I remember when Good Burger came out on VHS, and it was from Nickelodeon Studios, and it was orange, the cassette.
Oh yeah,
did shit like that.
Didn't Blue's Clues do something like that?
I don't know, man. I wasn't into Blue's Clues, dude. I was into Street Fights and fucking Living Hard, drinking.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
Just pounding broads. No, I'm kidding. I was a little too old for Blue's Clues by then, but I think Barney did it, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. So.
But yeah, I think it would have been Fantasia. And I remember the broomstick multiplying sequence when Mickey is the wizard. I forget. I mean, honestly, I'm not a big Fantasia fan, but that – can you curse on this?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, that just fudged me up. It was frightening. I remember that. That stands out in my mind. I also remember the first – yeah. Yeah, and I guess it would have been that and the movies my dad would make us watch, like Zulu, which is a movie from the early 60s with Michael Caine, where it's actually this did not hold up well. It's a bunch of British soldiers in an outpost somewhere, wherever in Africa the Zulu tribe is. I'm not exactly sure. And they are attacked by the Zulu, and they kill all of the Zulu, and they're the good guys. It's really, it did not age well. But it's got a young Michael Caine, and I remember that was always on, and I hated it because I was a little kid. I was like, I don't want to watch this shit. There's a bunch of English actors with mutton chops and shit.
Right. So what was that movie called?
It's called Zulu. Z-U-L-U.
I'm going to have to Google this and put a weird clip in this timeline.
Sure.
Okay. But that's interesting. And so transitioning that, what were the kind of movies you watched as a kid?
Okay. So it would have been the stuff that was on TBS and TNT and USA Network and stuff like that. So it would have been a lot of the movies that were on nonstop, right? So Shawshank Redemption was on all the time. A lot of action movies, right? Which I love action movies from that time period. So it would have been the Terminators 1 and 2. Terminator 2 being my favorite movie of all time. You know, like Billy Crystal comedies, fucking the Friday the 13th films, Nightmare on Elm Street. These movies were on all the time. And my parents were really, they were your classic 90s kind of working class Democrats. So they were just like, watch whatever you want. You know, they didn't have major rules. I remember my parents didn't want me to watch Reservoir Dogs. But pretty much anything up to just below that level of graphic. I grew up watching a shit ton. Like, my favorite movies of all time when I was a kid, and still to this day, were 80s slasher movies, which, I mean, why are those somehow better than Reservoir Dogs in terms of violence and shit? You know, he's like, it's Jason Voorhees chopping people's, you know, tits off and stuff. Like, it's crazy that my parents let me watch it, but they did.
Did you, not to go on a tangent, but did you see that Shout Factory now has a whole collection of Friday the 13th coming on October?
Is that a streaming service?
I don't know if they do streaming, but it's like a physical, it's like Criterion, but for like genre films.
Oh, fantastic. What's it called?
Shout Factory.
Shout Factory. I'm going to write that down.
Look them up. I think they will have it out sometime in October. I know it's definitely not out yet, but they're already like accepting pre-orders.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I guess I watched a lot of those movies when I was a kid. And I also watched, you know, the kid movies like The Sandlot and, you know, All Dogs Go to Heaven, Land Before Time, Lion King, still one of my favorite movies ever made.
Great movie, yeah.
Yeah, so like I was there, I was like 7 when Disney came roaring back with The Lion King and all that. So, you know, when Disney got good again. So I guess the first one I saw in theaters would have been either the Little Mermaid Disney? It was, yes. Right? Yes, okay.
1989 Disney.
Okay, so I was born in 87, so probably not that. That I might have seen on TV or VHS, but I do remember seeing Beauty and the Beast. Okay, this is my first memory of being in a movie theater, mm-hmm. is seeing Beauty and the Beast. And I loved it. How could you not? It's fantastic. I loved, you know, all the characters were amazing. And I loved the Beast. And then at the end of the movie, when the Beast finally turns back into a man, I started crying and pitching a fit. I was furious. And I remember why. He went from being understood for who he was and accepted for who he was and accepting who he was himself, and then at the end they're like, okay, well, you're rewarded, now you get to be this good looking hunk. And it's like, what the fuck? That totally undoes that beautiful message for me, even then at 5 or however old I was. I remember that was, oh, Gail, I was pissed, I couldn't sleep that night. My parents still bring that up.
Wow. That's interesting, because I mean, you could always see it as that internal beauty coming out, but
no, that's a great reading on it. I don't know, and you're probably first off, I haven't seen Beauty and the Beast in forever. I saw the 40s one. You know what I'm talking about? That
the French one.
Yeah, that Jean Renoir made under Nazi occupation too, if I'm not mistaken. That was awesome. But the Disney one, yeah, I guess you could read it that way. But then why do people get mad at the fucking Breakfast Club when, Ally Sheedy gets a makeover at the end? People say that's a bad message to send. Well, all they were doing was highlighting her attributes, right?
Fair enough.
I also grew up in a lot of John Hughes.
Fair enough. I mean, that movie has a Criterion, so who knows?
Breakfast Club?
Is on Criterion.
Okay. Real quick, see, I'm so glad you're asking me these questions, because it's flooding back to me. My favorite, okay, you know the song, And Then He Kissed Me, right, from the, It's used very effectively in the Copacabana sequence in Goodfellas. That's
right.
Mm-hmm. The girl group, I forget. I don't think it was the Supremes. I forget.
I can try to look it up real quick while you're talking.
Sure. I get into arguments all the time with my film buddies who they say that that song was used best in Goodfellas during the Copacabana scene. But for me, it is, I think the best use of that song is from the opening to Adventures in Babysitting, which is also in my top five of films ever. I fucking love that movie. Elizabeth Shue is awesome as shit. Bradley Whitford, like a young Bradley Whitford playing a total dick. That I watch that movie probably four times a year. Like that and Clueless are my two like teenage girl movies where I can just dance around, shake my little booty, and just, you know, get to live vicariously through those characters.
So, yeah, I remember seeing Adventures in Babysitting. I need to rewatch it because I don't even remember that song being in Adventures in Babysitting. And the probably the reason why so many people don't know about Adventure or that song in is because they haven't seen the movie. Because it's not a scary movie. It was a big hit, but still.
Yeah,
it's
Christopher Columbus. That's the one that got him to do Home Alone, wasn't it?
Following Heartbreak Hotel.
That's right. But I got to say, of all the Chris Columbus movies, for those who don't know, the guy who discovered America.
Yes. he came also, back from the dead and had a film career.
He made a bunch of kids movies. He was like, look, I know I did some bad shit, so I'll make up for it by providing wholesome family entertainment.
And then did Rent.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did the movie Rent.
That is like the movie for gay people about AIDS, and yet I have never seen it. I'm not a gay person with AIDS. I'm a gay person without, but knock on wood. But yeah. I've never seen Rent. I don't know anything about it, and I feel like that doesn't make me, that makes me like almost not gay. I feel like I have to see that one. You know what I mean? It's like one of those checklists of gaydom. Like, first one, are you attracted to the same sex? Okay. Next one, have you seen Rent? And so right now I'm scoring 50%. I'm getting an F, Kale.
Wouldn't there be a third and you have to watch the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Okay. Now, that's, I would say that you, it's either or. Like, you can see both and then you're double gay. But I've seen Rocky Horror Picture Show is my favorite musical. I love that fucking movie. It is, when I saw that as a kid, I was in the closet still. I was like 12 years old and I saw it on TV and I just knew it was gay. Do you know what I mean? Like it just looked
right. Gay.
And I had no context of what it was or anything. I didn't know about the midnight shows and all that shit. And so I turned it down, almost like turned the volume all the way down to just the lowest setting before it's mute, and sat there with my face right up against the screen. Just so I didn't want my parents to hear these songs about sweet transvestites from planet Transylvania, transsexual Transylvania and all that stuff. Oh my God. And then when Rocky comes out with that fucking smoking body and that David Bowie voice, I was like, holy shit. I knew right then. I was like, I'm not going back. I chose right then to be gay, Kale.
Yeah. I mean, how could you not?
Right? That movie's fantastic. That's a big one for me. That's also a big one for me. Rocky Horror, definitely.
Not to skip ahead, but have you actually been to any of like the Plaza screenings or the midnight screenings?
I've always been too scared to, because I know when you're fresh, they throw like the little Swedish fish at you or whatever, and there's like rituals.
It's like a hazing ritual?
Yeah. So I take it you haven't been either?
I've been always wanting to go, but my problem with, I feel like I should see like the movie like in a calm setting so I can be able to critique it.
Sure, you've never, oh. Rocky Horror, hold on, Rocky Horror.
Or not critique it, but like take it in.
No, I know what you mean. So you've never seen it?
No, I've seen clips.
I bet, I guarantee you if you watch, do you like musicals?
Some. I mean, there are some that are okay, and then there are some that are really great.
Yeah, no, I'm also, I don't know a lot of them. The more I watch, the more I enjoy them, like the old classics and stuff. Before COVID hit, Jandro, you know, Alejandro Espinosa, my co-director, mm-hmm. we went to they were doing those Fandango events and stuff like that at Regal. And we went to the one over off 85, right? It used to be the old drive-in back in the day. And we saw an American. Yes, yes. And we saw an American in Paris with Gene Kelly and other people of that era, I guess. And it was amazing. It was so fucking catchy, Kale. It was, yeah, I loved it. I loved it. But yeah, I bet you if you saw it, you'd really enjoy that movie a lot.
I would love it. I mean, you know, going back to Rent for a second, I've seen Rent. It's not great.
Yeah, that's what I've always heard. It's hokey, goofy shit, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's got an okay message, I guess.
Which is don't die of AIDS in Manhattan in the 80s, I think.
Yeah.
Isn't that what it's basically? Didn't everybody basically die from HIV at the end of it?
No, in the movie, everyone's still alive except one person.
Oh, okay. Okay, never mind. Except, I've just sort of heard of it.
Yeah. One person comes back from the dead from having AIDS.
It's like the ghost of HIV past, like, I mean, I'm not mocking, you know, HIV or AIDS, but it just sounds so over the top. But then again, it's a musical. How could it not be over the top, I guess? Like, I didn't see La La Land. Did you see that?
I've seen it multiple times. Because
you like it?
Yeah, I very much love that movie.
Okay.
I saw The Greatest Showman and thought it was okay.
Was that the one with Gerard Butler where they did like modern pop music sound?
You mean Hugh Jackman?
Who did I say?
Gerard Butler. The guy from 300.
Would it not have been better, right, if Leonidas was in there? Just kicking people in empty, bottomless holes. Anything is better with Gerard Butler kicking enemies into bottomless pits, Kale. I'll check it out, though. I do remember wanting to see La La Land, and you know, I get excited, like, as a movie fan, I don't know if you have this too, but like with you know, the rise of Marvel movies and Disney taking over the earth, I did
getting get rid of physical media. I mean, go ahead. Right.
Exactly. I got excited when there was a musical out that was doing so well because I was like, oh, maybe this will usher in a new era of musicals. And then when, you know, Get Out got really big, I was like, maybe we're going to get a bunch more horrors. And we did, you know, like Blumhouse and stuff. But mm-hmm. I just got so sick of just every movie has to make $1 billion at least, has to have 9 fucking movie stars who are fucking yoked to shit. Like, I wanted to see musicals and cowboy movies and, you know, the genre
and slasher movies. Films.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah. I want to see. Yeah. That's what I kind of love about Blumhouse and nowadays is that they're going back. They've done their own kind of original horror, which has had varying results, but they also are now readapting like Halloween, The Invisible Man. They're now doing
the great. I heard That's The Invisible Man was awesome. Yeah, you saw it? I heard it was so good.
Oh my God, it's so good. Lee Winnell, what a talent.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah, I definitely got to check that out. I saw, I feel like we're getting off from the main thing, I guess.
I'll take us back in a minute.
Okay, well then I saw, I love Hereditary. That was one of the best horror movies I've ever seen. Me and Alejandro, especially Alejandro, he is obsessed with it. I'm a close second. Like, we loved it. Then we went and we saw Midsommar. I am not saying Midsommar, and I'll tell you why. Fuck that movie. That movie made me mad. The reaction to it made me even madder because the critics were all like, he's the new Stanley Kubrick. And then I heard this, and you knew it was going to go straight to his fucking head. And now I hear the next movie he's got coming out is going to be like a 4-hour horror comedy. And I was like, fuck you. I want Hereditary type stuff. I want like a lean and mean hour 45, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, to be fair, I like Midsommar a little bit more than Hereditary because...
Really?
Well, I find Hereditary so funny.
It in the parts where it should be, though, right? Like when she's banging her head on the fucking attic upside down, that is hilarious because it's so crazy.
Well, I have this thing where if it's too intense, you know, or too ridiculous, I will start laughing at it.
Me too. Me and my mom both share that as moviegoers. Me and I saw it with her, which was fucked up. I did not know that movie was going to be about moms and children and shit, because it was really – do not see that movie with your mom sitting next to you. But I did, because we were on vacation, and it was me, Alejandro, his girlfriend Rachel, close friend of mine, and my mom. We were sitting there, and the scene where – she's lost her mind. She's banging her head on the fucking the attic door upside down. My mom and I both just bust out laughing because it was so fucking nuts, you know.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I should rewatch it again because, to me, I mean, I was alone in the theater, and I mean, I was just laughing the entire time. I mean, it was just a straight up comedy. If I'm being honest,
real. That's interesting. I don't know if I saw it necessarily. I definitely didn't see it like that, but you think
understand there's horror. It's a, you know, the horror reality of it. I understand it's the horror reality and it's terrifying, but it was just in my head. It's like, this is just so ridiculous. Like, why would anyone go to these lengths and bet on, you know, I mean, the girl, like, she has to get, you know, an allergic reaction to the one thing she knows she's an allergic reaction to. Right. And then she's got to stick her head out in the wind. Then something's got to do the. It's just like,
ridiculous. That fucking scene where Charlie fucking gets her head. That was so crazy. And then the kid just drives home. He gets in bed. You're telling me right now that Toni Collette's fucking scream when her off-screen scream when she finds the body, dude, that still fucks me up.
It's I'll admit that was a moment that really was dark for me, but there's this the problem with Ari Aster for me, I promise we'll get back, but the problem with Ari Aster for me is that he sometimes just goes way too much in the one direction. Like Midsommar opens with like the most complicated way to kill your family. Like, let's just.
Yeah, right. It was almost like fucking Pee Wee Herman invented that killing contraption. That was fucking weird, dude.
I mean, it's a great one-er shot, but once it was revealed what happened, I was like, I mean, I was laughing throughout the theater. Like, like for real? No one heard this girl, you know, set up the whole. No one heard that what was happening, but.
We were like, baby, why are you running all these pipes to our bedrooms? Are you okay?
Yeah.
How are things at home, honey?
Yeah, but I mean,
but okay.
I like Midsommar more, I think, just because of the ambition of it and the scale of it. It's a bigger movie, and I think the ending is both creepy and satisfying, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, I just thought it gave me that overwhelming feeling of... It felt very self-indulgent, which, I mean, you can say about masterpieces all day, too. So, I mean,
almost all of A24's horror is self-indulgent.
Oh, my God. I love A24, but you're right. They really walk a tightrope between really good art house kind of horror and just straight up pretentious nonsense. And I got to be honest, Midsommar felt like it just fell flat on its ass into pretentious land.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. And I love The Craft and all of their horror movies so far. Right. I won't name all of them, but I love all their craft in them. But sometimes it is just like, just get on with, you know,
yes.
Gravity is the soul of wit.
Yes. That's what fucking Midsommar felt like to me. It was like, dude, you could tell this story in an hour and a half and it'd be just as pretentious and fucking annoying, to be honest with you. Like the self-sacrifice scene, that was really cool and fucked up. I like, you know, obviously good gore in a movie. As a horror movie fan, when you get like, and actually when I saw the movie, when the old couple jumps from the cliff and then they have to bring out that big mallet and like smash the fucking person's face in.
Because he didn't die.
I laughed so hard because I just love when something is so violent, and I love violence in movies, right? So like,
I had to bite my hand to stop from just like gleefully laughing.
I know, but yeah, me too. I love something that is that fucked up. That to me is, that is the single best thing you can do in a horror movie is just give me that. Give me something so goddamn gross. You know what I mean? Except for Saw. I don't like the Saw movies, to be honest. Except for
It just looks dirty. You know, not saying gore should be beautiful, but it just, Saw has a problem of it just being so overlong and dirty and
grimy, like too grimy looking to me. Like everything looked like it just had mold on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I mean, even though they're bad people that are supposedly bad people that are getting, you know, the thing, it's still, you're just like, oh my God, this is awful.
Yeah, I don't care how bad they are. In fact, the worse they made the character's background, the more I felt gross watching it. Because it's like, to be honest, I don't like the idea of torture for...
Me neither.
Movies. I'm not a big fan of... I guess in real life, I'm not a fan either. But in horror films, it's kind of just a weird turnoff for me. Yeah. It's not even political. It's just I don't know. It doesn't feel like there's stakes. It doesn't feel fun. It feels just like... You know,
it feels like pornography.
Yes, and as you know, I'm part of the anti-pornography league. We are trying to shut down Pornhub. Nobody should ever touch their genitals again, in my opinion.
I don't mean it that way, but
I know. I'm kidding. I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
So what movies were snowballing into sort of you wanting to have a filmmaking career or be in film?
I always. When people talk about like TV shows from the 80s and 90s, I don't remember a lot of them because I only wanted to watch movies, right? And I'm still kind of that way, even with all the great television there is now, like on Netflix and HBO and all that kind of stuff. I still just really, I mean, I really fucking love a good, you know, just 90 minutes, 2 hours, however long the movie is, just sit down, lock into a story that hopefully resolves itself, you know, if it's a one-off. The movies that made me want to make movies kind of happened in fits and starts. So, like, I saw this movie. I don't know what this movie is, but I was 9 years old, and I saw this movie on just somewhere on TV where it was a young Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And he was – it's with Melanie Griffith, I think, where she's – She's a regular city girl who winds up dating a guy who's an Amish person, and she goes to stay, they get married, they live on the Amish place. Then the husband dies and she's stuck there and befriends Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I don't know what this movie is. I'm sure a quick IMDb search you'd find it, but I remember seeing that and I saw Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He was like 9 years old also, or however old he was. And I remember being like, oh my God, I want to act, right? So I went and I told my mom, I want to act. And she was very supportive. She put me into some acting class in Atlanta on the weekends. And I realized immediately I hated acting, right? The second I started doing it, I was like, oh, I have to remember lines and repeat things and stand places. And I remember looking at the acting class teacher when he would direct us to do stuff. And I remember being like, I want his job. I want to, like, tell people where to stand. I don't want to be told where to stand, right? I have a bad attitude. I want to be in charge. And so, but I didn't know what a director was. And then I was like 13 or 14 and I saw, no, it was even older. I remember like, just trying to remember all this. When I was a kid and I would see like Steven Spielberg movies, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that there was a director. I just thought these movies were just like came out of nowhere. So when I found out what a director was, Steven Spielberg is the person who made this movie you really love with Indiana Jones, right? Steven Spielberg made the movie with the little alien guy, right? Steven Spielberg
right.
made these movies about the big shark. And then when I found out what a director was, I got really excited about that, but I still thought I couldn't do it. And then when I turned about 14 or 15, my dad bought me Repo Man on VHS by Alex Cox. That's the movie that made me want to make movies. That made me realize I could make movies because Repo Man looks like some regular person made it versus Spielberg movies that look like fucking God made it. Repo Man looked like some dude with a bunch of weird thoughts made a movie. And right then I was like, I want to do that, you know? So
right.
It was Repo Man.
So like what way did it look like, you know, something you could do? Was it like shot on VHS or was it just shot on?
No. It was just
regularly film.
Wonderfully shot too, by the way, on film. I forget the DP's name, but it's a gorgeously shot film. It was several things. I was in a punk rock band, and the main character in the film, I mean, the film takes place in Los Angeles in the early 80s, and in the early 80s in Los Angeles there was the hardcore punk scene, so bands like Fear, Black Flag, Circle Jerks, that kind of stuff. And the Circle Jerks, one of my favorite hardcore bands, they're in Repo Man, right? They're featured pretty prominently in a couple of scenes. And so it was the punk rock aspect of the film itself. Like, the film has a punk rock, fuck you, anything goes type approach to it. I mean, Iggy Pop did the theme song that plays in the title sequence in the beginning. It wasn't made shitty. Like, it's a finely made film, but the subject matter is very aggressively punk rock.
So the cinematographer is Robbie Mueller. He does a lot of Jim Jarmusch, did To Live and Let Die with William Friedkin. So, yeah.
Wonderfully fucking shot film, dude. It looks so good. But also, it's got Emilio, you know? It's got Emilio Estevez teamed up with the original, like, leathery, alcoholic, chain-smoking, acid punk from the 60s, fucking Harry Dean Stanton, right? This movie has so much attitude, and it's undeniable. Like, if you like that movie, you love that movie. And I became obsessed with that movie. It's the only movie that I would go around friend to friend with the VHS copy and make them watch it. You know what I mean? Like, you have to watch. It's not recommended. Like, oh, you know, did you see that in a movie? Oh, I saw it. You should check it.
It's a requirement.
Like, you have to watch this right now. You have to give me 98 minutes, sit the fuck down and watch this movie with me. Yeah, dude, that was the movie that did it all. Right then I started writing screenplays. They were garbage. You know, your first screenplays are always shit. But I started writing screenplays, the whole thing. I couldn't even focus at school anymore. And I eventually dropped out of high school, went straight into the Art Institute and the film program there, and met Alejandro, and we started making movies, you know. But yeah, it all started with Repo Man is the one. Like, you can see the fingerprints of the filmmakers on it. And that's the first time I ever saw that. There were movies before that for other people. Repo Man is the one I saw first. That was my gateway into it, you know.
Right. That's interesting. I've never seen Repo Man. So now I got to go find it.
And here's the thing. Here's what I love about it is you might not even like it. You might love it. You might be cool with it. You might see it and be like, it's all right, right? But
sure.
What I love about it is it's mine. It's like, it's that record I found when I was 15. I was like, this is the music I'm listening to for the rest of my life, right? I found The Descendants, Milo Goes to College, and I was like, I am only listening to punk rock for the next at least 5 years, right? Same thing with Repo Man. When I found Repo Man, I was like, this is the movie that, this saved my life in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? And I'm sure you have that movie for you, where it's like, this movie made me want to, one way or another, be involved in this crazy fucking industry, this nightmarish at times industry.
It was Sam Raimi's Spider-Man.
God damn, yeah, that's a great one. That's a great one. Really?
Yeah.
Is it Sam Raimi's just, are you a Sam Raimi fan? Kind of in general?
I mean, I haven't seen all of his work, but I've seen all the Evil Dead movies, the Spider-Man movies, Drive Me to Hell. I need to catch up because I still haven't seen Darkman or...
Oh, God. When I was a kid, Darkman was a movie that I saw that I had nightmares for years after I saw Darkman. And it's not really, it's not a scary movie. It's a crazy, it's basically a comic book movie, but that movie scared the shit out of me. The way he looked, oh, dude, that I cannot speak highly enough of that fucking movie.
So, yeah, I mean, for me, you know, Spider-Man, you know, what was so cool about it was it was the first movie, like, in live action. You know, I've seen a lot of live action movies prior to that movie, and I've seen a lot of animation movies prior, but that was the first live action film where I was like, oh my God, these are real people, or real. I mean, I know Spider-Man's not real, but it, or I knew it back then, but this was like, it felt like a real, authentic, like these are people in a dire situation with stakes and tragedy. And at the end, I mean, I was just compelled by the, you know, the tragedy and the heroism of it all.
So, like, it was it that, how old were you when you saw it?
I was like 7 or 8 years old.
And you just were just wrapped up in that.
Oh, yeah. Like,
right.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I was teary-eyed when
died. Sure.
And, sure. You know, and Peter can't, you know, be with Mary Jane because he's got to be Spider-Man. But I was, you know, immediately wrapped up in that, like, sweeping shot at the end of Spider-Man swinging through this, you know, through New York City and Queens.
You know, I think the one that did that for me of, like, the big action movies that you see when you're a kid that just...
Right.
The one that did that for me, and I mentioned it earlier as being my favorite movie of all time, right? And every time I say it, I feel like I have to qualify before I even say the movie, is I'm a huge Coen Brothers fan. I've seen fucking Breathless. I've seen I know a lot of art house cinema, The Red Balloon by Albert Lamourisse. Sure. My favorite film of all time, though, is Terminator 2 Judgment Day. And it's because...
Absolutely.
Right? My fucking God, man. I saw it when I was 7 years old. And
same.
That to me is that's like my Sam Raimi Spider-Man for you. It's the movie where it was like, it is, and I still feel all of the emotions every time I watch it. It never wanes, right? Because it's big as fuck, right? It has these crazy, this crazy, unrealistic, total science fiction plot, but it's so human. It touches on such big things. And, you know, I always kind of felt like a, I love my dad, but I have a weird, strained kind of relationship with
we
him.
We all do.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's
well, true. I mean,
no,
to
you're
some
right.
extent, we let's say we both do for our no, parents.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Yeah, I have similar right. stuff with my dad. And growing up, I had similar stuff with my dad. He was, you know, tough guy. He had a lot of, you know, not a lot, but he definitely had problems as a person. And... the thing that always spoke to me, even though I didn't realize it when I was fucking 7, that I loved about T2 was the father-son, you know, surrogate father-son relationship between John Connor and the T-800, Arnold's character, mm-hmm. where, you know, Sarah Connor says it at one point, you know, he'll never leave him. He'll never disappoint him. You know, he'll always be there to protect him. I didn't feel like I had that safety net growing up. And that's something that always speaks so damn loud to me when I watch Terminator 2. But besides that part, it's, I mean, fuck, dude. It's just so total. It has everything in it. The soundtrack by Brad Fidel, the fucking, you know, the T-1000, those CGI effects still kick fucking ass. That's saying something because it's almost 30 years old, dude. That came out in 91, July 3rd, I believe, 1991. That movie
right.
fucking big to me, man. That is my, I can never, you'll have to shut me up when I'm talking about T2, dude.
Well, you know, when I saw T2, it's right after Spider-Man. It was actually in between Spider-Man 2 and Terminator 3 because my dad was kind of trying to get me into Terminator because he heard the third one was coming out. So I watched Terminator 2 first. Did you watch Terminator 2 before Terminator 1?
I was trying to think about this the other day, and I don't remember anymore because I definitely saw Terminator 1 a lot on TV as a kid, but I do think I saw them out of order. I do think I saw T2 first, I think.
I definitely saw it out of order because my dad loved T2. I don't want to say he loved it more, but he really loved T2. And so that was my gateway into the Terminator franchise. And for me, I just, you know, I mean, I really loved it. And then I was disappointed by the third one.
Oh, no.
At 9 years old.
So you, I know, me too, except for one thing. There's only one thing that I loved about T3. I had a huge crush on Nick Stahl, the new John Connor.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. Yeah. Oh, huge. I just, his vulnerability, cute face to begin with, just everything about him. But that movie's garbage. That so sucks that you saw T2 and then, like, what did you see it, like a week or something before you saw Rise of the Machines?
No, it's like months before.
Oh, okay. So at least you, like, had some time to really appreciate T2 before you had that.
Yeah, and I also saw T1 months before T3. Oh,
dude, T1 is still, I mean, I do think, like, in terms of my top five favorite action movies, which I won't list, but the top one is Terminator 2 because it's my favorite movie of all time. It's also my favorite action movie. My second favorite action movie of all time, though, is the first Terminator. And I do think it's probably my favorite independent film, like next to Repo Man, because I don't know. I have a weird affinity for old Los Angeles from like the 80s, 70s, 60s era. And I think the first Terminator really captures like downtown LA and how seedy it is. And oh my God, the scene at Tech Noir. And just, I love that movie so much. Michael Biehn is, you know, he's still just a boss, just his fucking race. He's so cool, you know.
He's perfect because, I mean, well, I mean, the casting on that first movie was so perfect because, you know, Linda Hamilton, she has to go from, you know, girl next door type person to, you know, the soldier that we know her now as. Even then, she was getting those features in.
Right.
And, you know, Michael Biehn, he's tough, but he's also, I mean, vulnerable, especially considering Arnold's, like, you know, stature.
No, absolutely. Yeah, he's a scrawny dude. Like, you know, he can. What I love about him is he sort of has that same thing that Clint Eastwood brought to westerns in the 60s and 70s, where it's like he's not John Wayne. Like Clint Eastwood was this tall, lanky dork who could get his ass handed to him, and he often did. Same thing with Kyle Reese is. You know, he's this scrawny little punk running around trying to, you know, trying to thwart Skynet and save, you know, the mother savior of the human race. It's fantastic, dude.
Yeah, and I think that, yeah, and I think that was all lost in Genesis when you hire big Jai Courtney.
Dude, the Terminator franchise is, it so sucks because I don't like to even talk about any of the movies past T2 because they immediately go to shit. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, how can you top Cameron?
You really fucking can't, dude. You know, you really can't. You know, everybody talks Spielberg, but, and I love Spielberg, but James Cameron was absolutely doing something just as big, if not bigger, really, especially when it comes to, you know, special effects and stuff like that. Like, you know, when James Cameron puts out a movie, he, like, that's usually the signal of a major change in computer graphics in the film industry, right? So, like, The Abyss, which isn't even that good, but The Abyss was a big one, and then obviously Terminator 2. And then Titanic, which was, you know, like a $1 billion movie, which...
And then, of course, True Lies.
True Lies is one of the funniest, greatest... Like, what I love about True Lies is he had just done Terminator 2 a couple years before, and he's like, you know what? I just want to make a really kind of zany, goofy, fun, but altogether badass action movie. And, dude, Jamie Lee Curtis is so fucking cool. She's so hot. She's a badass. She's hilarious in it. That's one of my favorite Jamie Lee Curtis roles, you know, outside of Laurie Strode.
Right. And for me, you know, what I love about True Lies is it really does take its time to examine, even though it's an odd structure. We go from first act, we're concerned about Crimson Jihad, to second act, we're worried about Bill Paxton and Jamie Lee Curtis having an affair.
Yeah. He's to, such a, oh, I miss him so much. He was great in that.
To third act, we're back to Crimson Jihad, but we're now worried that he kidnapped, but we now have to go get the daughter.
Hold on. Let me mount a little bit of a defense here.
Oh no, this is not me. You know.
Okay. Misread. Got a little too defensive.
Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, because the movie's not really. What's funny is the terrorists with a nuclear bomb part of the story is a subplot. The main plot of the story is basically a husband and wife falling back in love. That is beautiful, dude. That is so great.
Well, it's also a story about a husband realizing, oh, wait, my wife also needs me. My wife also needs, you know, adventure. She needs her adventure too. I go on these like James yes. Bond-esque, you know, adventures where Charlton Heston with an eye patch tells me what to do. and she's stuck at, you know, some regular desk job, you know, miserable. raising my rebellious, teenage daughter.
And thinking this is all life's ever going to be is me just working at this place. Then she meets Simon. And let me just say that Bill Paxton, who I miss, that was a real fucking shame that he passed so goddamn young. He is so funny as Simon in this movie. He's like, you know, like when he's he has no idea that he's talking to this chick's husband when he's at the car dealership, and he's just describing her. He's like, oh man, I got this one on the leash right now. You know, she got thighs, make you stand up and beg for buttermilk, you know, ass like a 10-year-old boy. He's just like this creepy scumbag. And like Arnold fantasizes, yeah, just punching him dead.
It's perfect. Like, I think it's underrated. Like I get it. It's 2.5 hours, but it's a 2.5 hour James Cameron just like letting it loose and just having fun with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, man, I gotta say, to be honest, what a great pairing that was for, especially the genre of action films, is Arnold Schwarzenegger and James Cameron, right? Like when James Cameron first met Arnold, it was he was forced to meet with Arnold for consideration for Kyle Reese in the original Terminator. And when he met with Arnold, he was going to go meet with Arnold to basically start an argument, right? Because he didn't want Arnold. And he was going to start an argument with Arnold so he could go back to the studio execs and say, look, it's not working out with Arnold. He didn't want Arnold.
He wanted Lance Henriksen as the Terminator.
Yeah, yeah. And then apparently Arnold just immediately started telling him all these ideas about how the Terminator should move and just meet. And then apparently, as the way James Cameron says it, that the way the light was coming through in the window they were sitting next to during their meeting, he just looked at him. He was like, oh my God, I'm talking to the Terminator. Cast him right then. And they went on to make, yeah, three truly fucking fun, great powerhouse action films. And True Lies is 100%. I mean, dude, I adore that movie. I love that movie so fucking much. I'll probably put it on after this is done, because I love that movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think Cameron gets dogged a lot because of his commitment to make, you know, 10 Avatar movies, but...
I don't know either about that, man. That's weird. They better be fucking good, and I'll be honest, I don't even remember the first Avatar anymore. It's been
over... They're gonna have to re-release the movie, so...
They really will, dude. Like, is there a date for them to be released at this point? Like, a firm...
Well, they just moved it... moved it again for COVID.
Oh, my God. And you know what's funny is... I was all right with Avatar when I saw it. I wasn't blown away personally.
I liked it a lot, but that was me at 15 years old.
Well, no, I'm sure maybe it's aged even better than, because I haven't seen it since it came out. And there was a lot of like anti-Avatar rhetoric. I don't know if you remember, like South Park was making fun of it, saying it was basically just Dances with Wolves, but with Smurfs, I think was the thing. And
sure, whatever.
Well, you know, I think
that's my opinion on it. Yeah, sure.
I agree. Right. I know.
Sure, Trey Parker and Matt Stone. Yeah. Great. Great point comparison. You're brilliant.
Also, you can do that with any movie. You can be like, this is like that other movie. You'd be like, sure, but this one is not that movie. It's called something else, you know?
Well, I think Avatar kind of just got caught in this, you know, this was also the height of like CinemaSins at Red Letter Media, where everyone was just like criticizing or comparing stuff. And I think that's kind of wrong to do for a movie, because if it's well directed, like if you're stealing from the best and you do it very well, then you should get a B+.
Dude, every artist steals from other artists. That's how you do that. You go, okay, what are the things I love? Oh, you know,
yeah.
I'm thinking of a scene that's a lot like this scene in a movie I love. Well, let me adapt that. Let me just take the flavor of it, or, you know what I mean? Like, everybody does it. So I've never really gotten being like, this movie's like that movie. Like, okay, dick. You know?
I mean, Tarantino steals all the time from whatever, and everyone's like, this is fucking great.
Yeah, yeah, I think he does his with enough of a, like, this isn't, it's his feel like little presence for people who know what he's referencing. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like,
absolutely. Oh,
this is a shot from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, or whatever, you know.
Or this random movie that came out, you know, years ago, or in the 50s, I know, from Tokyo.
Yes, always some just like schlock movie from 1971 that played in 8 theaters in America, and he's like, he's the fucking asshole who saw all of those movies and knows them all by heart.
Yeah, because that's what happens when you live in LA. You just can go see any movie anywhere.
Well, I used to complain that I wish I had that Tarantino knowledge. You know, when you see him in interviews and he's just like, well, that's the editor who did this thing for this 1974 movie, right? Okay. I always bitch. I was like, I want that knowledge. And then Alejandro was like, well, you do have that knowledge. It's just for
a different
90s movies. It's for right. 90s movies. And the reason for that is to go with what we've been talking about is my mom took me to the movie theaters at least once a weekend for 8 years, right? And sometimes 2 or 3 times, sometimes catching opening night on a Friday, like we did when we saw The Newton Boys, that Richard Linklater movie that is not that good. It's with Ethan Hawke and fucking Skeet Ulrich and Vince D'Onofrio is one of the brothers for some reason. But like, I saw every movie that came out. It didn't matter if it was good or bad, dude. I saw all of them. I saw Dr. T and the Women. I saw fucking, like, it did not matter what it was. I saw it. And so I know anytime somebody brings up a bad movie from the 90s, I know that movie.
Ever since I've graduated high school, I would usually go once a weekend to see 1 or 2 movies.
It's great, isn't it?
It is.
I know, man. I was starting to get back into it, too, just before COVID hit. I was going every week. I was going to, what's the theater in Midtown? They would show old movies and stuff like that on Tuesday nights.
Midtown Art Cinema?
Yes. I was going there. Dude, we saw shit I would never get to see. Like, we saw, we saw Clockwork Orange on a fucking big screen. That was so fun, you know? We saw Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song, which is straight up one of the weirdest fucking movies I've ever seen. It is, but at the same time, it is Mario Van Peebles was really into French New Wave, so it is. It's not like I'm gonna get you sugar and stuff like that, like Foxy Brown type stuff. It's like fucking acid weirdo shit, dude. But it is fan fucking tastic, man. I saw Putney Swope, the movie by Robert Downey Sr., which is funny as fuck, man. That movie's so good. Paul Thomas Anderson talked about it, and you can tell if you watch that movie, it is like Paul Thomas Anderson took a lot of shit from that movie. It is so fun. But I was seeing all these movies. I was going back to the theaters, and then COVID hit, you know, and I've just been watching fucking Cheers reruns on Hulu to calm down at night.
Yeah, I've been catching up on TV. You know, I finally caught up to Rick and Morty.
Is it good?
I love Rick and Morty. Well, right. Rick and Morty is kind of like my life right now.
But you hang out with a crazy scientist?
No, I'm like the Morty and life is Rick. I'm just okay. At the mercy of
of older people that are in charge that, you know, just are ambitious and crazy and just will do anything.
Sure. Well, hey, welcome to Earth, you know.
Yeah. So that's my life.
That's capitalism, man. If you can't keep up, step aside, bro. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, that's, I cannot wait till it's like you can comfortably sit in a movie theater and actually not be like, okay, what's happening around me? Did they scrub this place or whatever the fuck?
The cough.
Yeah, man, I can't wait. And I don't know. I don't know if movie theaters will even make it out of this whole, I don't even want to talk about it. It's so depressing, but you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, I want to go, because what's interesting is the movie theaters that are open, they're actually showing like movies that you and I grew up on.
What are they showing?
They're like showing The Goonies and Dirty Dancing, and you know, man. They're showing E.T. They had a special little run on The Empire Strikes Back for the 40th anniversary.
Oh, that's great. I love that. Obviously, you know, I'm a big fan of that.
Friday the 13th is showing at certain places. So
that is awesome. The original or?
The very original.
And the first, okay, yeah. Yeah, the Sean S. Cunningham directed classic ripoff of Halloween, to be honest. It's fine.
It'll make a great riff tracks one day.
Look, here's the truth. Here's the truth. When people talk Friday the 13th and they're not, and everybody wants to say the first one is their favorite because they, I feel like we've
it's
been,
it's not,
it's fucking, to be honest, it's kind of shitty. Okay.
It's very shitty.
I could write a dissertation on that entire series because I've watched all of those movies end over end, probably 100 times. Like I have a fucking Jason Voorhees mug. I've got 3 different Friday the 13th t-shirts. I wear them all the time. I know everything about them. The great Friday the 13th installment is the fourth one, okay? The fourth one is so fucking good. The final chapter. It is the one where, you know, fucking, oh my God.
Corey Feldman.
Well, yes, Corey Feldman, obviously, Crispin Glover's in it. Crispin Glover is so good in it. His death is fantastical. But the directing is actually pretty goddamn solid. They got a and he does a great job. And obviously, oh my God, I just said I know everything about this series and I'm blanking. What's his name? The special effects genius. Why is Rick Baker, who is not
Rick Baker.
I know.
Not Rob Bottin.
God damn it. This is so embarrassing.
He does the Romero movies.
Yes. Oh my God.
I bought this book for his book for somebody. Keep talking. I'll find it. Keep talking about the Friday the 13th okay. Part four.
It's just the best. You know, oh my God, no, I can't keep talking. I need to know now.
I got it. Hold on. I'm pulling it up.
He's pulling it up, ladies.
Tom Savini.
What the fuck, man? That's embarrassing that I didn't know that. Tom Savini came back and he is at the height of his powers as a fucking special effects expert. When Jason gets demasked and gets the fucking machete into the side of his head, he falls to the ground, and then they cut to this shot of his like face as it slides down the length of the fucking machete. It is gruesome. It is gorgeous. It is honestly, it's actually paced very well. I cannot speak highly enough of it. Now, my favorite, of course, is Friday the 13th, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan, and the reason for that is just it's the one I saw first on USA Network. Gilbert Gottfried used to do he did sort of like a Joe Bob Briggs thing, at least for a couple of weekends in the 90s at some point on USA Friday nights, and it would just cut to him, all right, here's the next movie, with that fucking voice, and
all
they,
right.
yeah exactly, and they played Friday the 13th Part 8 Jason Takes Manhattan, and it's terrible. It is not a good movie. And yet,
yeah, I was about to say,
but I'll tell you this, I have a fucking low-key theory on why it's genius, okay? It came out in 1989, right at the end of the 80s, obviously. And they successfully have Jason kill off every annoying trope of the 1980s. Hair metal girl, dead, right? VHS video nerd, dead, right? fucking the overbearing psychiatrist who's playing with people's heads, dead. They just killed
the mean teacher.
The mean teacher, dead. It's fantastic. And then you know, he's only in Manhattan for like fucking 18 minutes, and it's fucking Vancouver.
Yeah, he's only in Manhattan for one shot of the movie.
I know, it's so bad. And oh my god, he is the toxic waste, okay? In the 80s, there were always just drums of toxic waste sitting around everywhere. And
y'all were really into that toxic waste.
We loved it back then, man. It was the 80s. It was a different era. I mean, I was 3, but you know, it was, you just did what you had to back then, and what you had to do was a lot of toxic waste, man. You know? So you kids got it so easy now with COVID. I mean, back then, dude, toxic waste, watch out.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so to round this out a bit, what movies pique your interest now?
You mean like genre and stuff? Like what type of films I'm into?
Yes, right now, sure. It could be a genre.
Well, I don't know. Okay, so like I just read this great book by Sam Wasson, I think, and it's called The Long Goodbye, and it's about the making of Chinatown and the beginning and the end of an era, right, of the new wave of American cinema in the 70s and Jack Nicholson and all this. Oh, it's so fantastic. So I've been really wanting to watch just a lot of older movies I didn't know about, right? Or that I've always heard of and never seen, right? I'm back to that, you know when you go in and out of that period of like the checklist of the movies you should see, sort of like the AFI top 100 type deal, where it's like, okay, I've never seen Citizen Kane, you know, or that kind of thing. So I think I'm sort of checking that stuff off my list. I'm also, I mean, I have the action movie podcast, so I've been watching a lot of action movies, you know, that I haven't seen. Like, I hadn't seen the John Wick trilogy, and it's fantastic. I enjoyed it, loved it a lot. You know, that's about it. That's about where I'm at right now, is like trying to watch older movies, and I go in, you know, I don't know, I have periods. Let me finish my sentence. I have periods where I get into like an actor or a filmmaker, right? So I've been in sort of a Jack Nicholson phase again. So I was watching, did you ever see the James L. Brooks movie, Terms of Endearment? I think it's from 1980. I saw that movie on, what's that streaming app that's free and it's kind of shitty?
Peacock.
No, not Peacock. Crackle. The one where it's basically TV.
IMDb TV?
No. Damn, there's a lot of streaming services now. Pluto TV. I was watching Pluto TV, and I saw HUD by Paul Newman. It's from the early 60s. He just plays a son of a bitch. It is a fantastic film about just life on a ranch in Texas. It's really good, man. But then I saw Terms of Endearment, and that movie devastates me. It's one of the most beautiful, funniest, and really sad. The ending crushes me every time I see it, man. It's got a lot going on, you know. So I've been watching a lot of Jack Nicholson movies, you know, that I've seen or haven't seen before, like, you know, Five Easy Pieces, you know, The Last Detail, which is great, script by Robert Town. Great fucking movie. Bob Rafelson movie, I think.
Going back to The Big Goodbye, that's actually being made into a movie right now. Ben Affleck's directing it.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh my god, that sounds so good. I wonder who they're going to cast as John Huston. That is my number one question. My favorite all-time filmmaker is John Huston, because, and what I mean by favorite filmmaker, I don't mean all of his movies. I mean, the man himself is my hero. He is like this, you know, I'll use the terms of like you woke online stirs. He's very problematic, right? And toxically masculine. Having said that, I adore the ever-living shit out of that man because he spoke Spanish. He smoked cigars. He and fucking Bogey just getting shit house drunk on the set of The African Queen. Everybody else on the set got sick from tainted water because they shot it on a location in Africa. Everybody got sick from the water, right? Had diarrhea for days, except for John Huston and Humphrey Bogart, because all they drank was fucking whiskey and scotch. I love John Huston. And he has such an amazing entrance in The Big Goodbye. Such an amazing entrance that I won't spoil, but when he shows up in that book, it is everything you would want as a John Huston fan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ben Affleck. Yeah, I mean, I gotta read this book because I mean, I just heard about it 2 days ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
Ben.
Kale, you will fucking love it. You don't even need to know a lot about that era. Like I know some. I bet you do too, but. It gives you so much more, man. Then the way it explains Hollywood, it's actually good to, you know, watch that, read that and then watch, rewatch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And you get a real flavor of what LA was in the late 60s, early 70s, man.
I need to, because I liked Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as well. Sure. You know, but I really, it's just an interesting time. And I mean, I've been reading up books of like how they like, you know, led up to the 60s, like the golden era or golden age of cinema. And so, yeah, I'm interested. I'll have to get it because I've been looking for more books about that era.
Dude, that's the book. I mean, at least that I've found so far. It is so good, dude.
Yeah.
It has the most beautiful ending line. I will not say it, of course. That is for you to find. But, oh, shit. When I read the last line of that fucking book, I was just like, holy shit. I started like, shaking, then I started convulsing. I shit myself.
Seizure.
Oh, is that what happened? I had blurred double vision. No, but I'm telling you, it's a really good book. I'm so excited that they're making a movie out of that. That is awesome.
Yeah, they're making it. Paramount's
who's
going to
play Robert Evans? Oh my God, who's going to play these people? Who's going to play Jack Nicholson? Who's going to play Faye Dunaway, dude? Who is going to play Roman Polanski?
Kate Blanchett for Faye Dunaway.
Is she?
No, but I mean, that would be my choice.
Well, I could see that. I don't know. Movie magic. I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading up about it, and I was like, oh, this is really good, you know, and I love Ben Affleck, so, you know, why not?
Sure.
You know. Really. So, yeah, I'm into it, but yeah, so, okay, I think
that's good.
So, let me ask you this. So, one more thing.
Please.
You mentioned you had a podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
What's this podcast, and do you want people to find it?
It's called the Joe Rogan Experience. it's called Serial. No, it's called Action Movie Podcast Now, and it's just a fun podcast I do with my buddy Philip Shadburn, where it's a comedy podcast where we talk about action movies. Could be ones from back in the day, newer ones. You know, a lot of focus on Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone, Jean-Claude Van Damme. We did Steven Seagal, Chuck Norris, who I fucking hate. We have to do him. You can find that anywhere you can find your podcast. You know, Apple Podcasts would be great. Stitcher,
Spotify,
absolutely. Yeah, Anchor.fm, who we're sponsored by now.
Awesome. That's where we're going to be at.
Yeah, dude, it's actually really cool. You get to record your own ad. Yeah.
Yay, I'm still like playing with it. So,
you get paid for it. You get paid for it, you know? I mean, it's not much, believe me. It's not much. You have to get a bunch of sponsors, but you can make some beer money.
I'll take any, you know.
No shit, right? I know, right? I know. Even if it's just a Snickers bar worth, I'll take it.
Yeah. I'll take it. I mean, what's, you know, not a free meal or, you know, what, what's not a good, you know, meal at McDonald's? So
yeah, no shit, right? But yeah, it's Action Movie Podcast Now. And yeah, you can find it anywhere. And then obviously Alejandro Espinoza and I are between projects, but we have Michael Plays Video Games available on YouTube, which is it's where my best friend and co-director, Alejandro Espinoza, he grew up with video games, he's a huge video game nerd, big fan, and he makes me play his favorite video games. So far we've done two seasons. We did the first Crash Bandicoot, the re-release they did in 2017, which was so fun but so frustrating. And then the latest one we just did was Streets of Rage 2, which was a fucking nightmare to get through that one. COVID happened in the middle of it. It's really hard, but you know, a lot of curse words, a lot of frustration. It's really great. So Michael Plays Video Games, available on YouTube. Yeah.
All right, and I'll have links in the description for both of those in the both down here. Check them out. Highly recommend it. Thank you, Michael. One more thing. Where do you have social media accounts? Where can the good people find you? And where can the old bad people avoid you?
Okay. Let's see. For Michael Plays Video Games, we're on Facebook. Just type in Michael Plays Video Games in the search bar. You'll find it.
I'll have a link in the description.
Yep. Same thing for Action Movie Podcast Now. We are on Instagram at Action Movie Podcast Now, and we are on Facebook, Action Movie Podcast Now, and you can find us there. And you can find me just running these fucking streets, dude. That's where you can find me. Like, if you want to find me, these bad people you were talking about, you can find me down here in Buckhead, drinking tea in a bathtub.
Awesome.
And such a badass.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Michael. We will
this was fun. Kale, I just gotta say, this was a lot of fun. This felt even more fun than your old podcast. This was actually really cool to come on here and talk about. I love talking about like what gets you into movies, your favorite movies and stuff. So have me on again, man. I would love to do this, but please have Alejandro on, because he's got some really interesting ways that he got into films too. You know, I bet you that you would have a fun conversation with him.
All right. I mean,
and Philip, well, Philip's going to be a bunch of bad movies you've never heard of. It's going to be like Ghoulies 3, Ghoulies Go to College.
Hey, whatever makes the conversation, right?
Exactly. But no, this was awesome, man. I'm really happy to see you doing a podcast again.
Oh yeah. Yes. All right. Thanks, everyone. We will go now to our outro.
Awesome.
Okay.